It's 1 o'clock and time for the new WHFR Journal, local news and alternative views for today, which is October 1st, 2010. Happy birthday, Jimmy Carter. As you probably know, our former president is 86 today and back in good health if you've been following the news. I know that's a national thing and we do local, but just had to say happy birthday to one of my favorite presidents. Who's yours? Here we go. WHFR, Dearborn. Hello and welcome to another edition of the new WHFR Journal for Friday, October 1st, 2010. That's right, 10-1-10. Like all those numbers lining up like that. Isn't that cool? Local news and alternative views for Dearborn and the surrounding area. Where else can you get this kind of show except at the station making waves, WHFR.FM? So many things happening today other than Jimmy Carter's birthday that we already mentioned. Locally, on campus, Henry Ford Community College is hosting the Student Political Issues Conference. We have students from all over, at least southeastern Michigan here, talking to candidates and actually having agendas that they're completing about where they stand and where the candidates stand on a wide variety of issues. So it's a real activist-oriented, agenda-oriented thing with real politicians. I believe we're hosting Dearborn Heights Mayor Dan Poletko today, as well as Wayne County Commissioner Gary Warrenchuk, and others, too. So that's going on, and that's for not just students at Henry Ford, but for the whole area to sort of pull together their agendas and, of course, their participation in their political process. Peace Action bus leaves tonight from Oak Park at 7:30 for Washington, D.C. You want to be in that protest in Washington, D.C. with about 70 other buses that will be coming from all around the country. Contact Peace Action of Michigan quick and let them know you're coming. Cost of that is $70. Also, so many things happening, and we'll get back to that. We have a special guest in the studio today. An artist has a gallery exposition exhibit tonight at the Sisson Gallery in the Fine Arts Building here on Henry Ford Community College campus. And I'm going to turn our discussion with that gentleman over to Dennis Reimars here, our local reporter, and welcome our guest to the studio.
Thanks, Jay. Good afternoon. We're here with Nigerian artist, and I'm going to do this right. Ima Ime.
Yes.
I did it. All right, cool.
Really good.
All right, and what we're talking about is tonight from 8 to 10 o'clock, and I know that there's a lecture at 7 p.m.
There is a very special lecture at 7 that really should go unmissed.
Okay. Yes. Well, and we're right here. It's right here in Henry Ford Community College campus, and the exhibition is titled Cadence, Narratives of Yesterday, Tomorrow, in Bride Residue. Tell me the title. Please explain. Right away, you have my attention.
Right away. Cadence is the Cadence exhibition really is a culmination of ideas that in some way are a marriage between my doctoral research at Yale University, which I finished, thankfully, in 2009, and a number of intriguing ideas I've been dealing with as an artist. So it really is a bridge and a marriage, a collision course of sorts between what I do as a writer and a historian and what I do as an artist. And the title itself, of course, somehow connotes music, but also text. The idea of musical notes and bars somehow having a resolution, but sometimes having deceptive resolutions, things that don't sound correct or somehow are ambiguous. And in many ways, the title really reflects what the artwork is doing in terms of discussing Black diaspora history, and a very strained and sometimes beautiful and sometimes ambiguous relationship between the African diaspora and the West. And so as a Nigerian American, I'm American born, but my family is Nigerian, what I've been doing is creating works and doing research that deal with Southeast Nigeria, the Ibibio province of Nigeria, where my family from which my family hails, and having a conversation with aesthetic ideals and philosophies that can be somehow superimposed on African American culture to tell a larger story, a larger narrative of our history.
Now you're at you teach at Westfield.
Yes.
In Westfield State University in Westfield, Massachusetts.
Yes.
But family is still in Nigeria. Yes.
I have a lot of extended family in Nigeria. My immediate family, mother, father, brothers, sisters, are all in the U.S.
Okay. How often have you been there to visit family?
Well, I've visited often. I actually was partly brought up there when I was much younger, and certainly for my doctoral research, I went back to study an ancient ritual, which isn't so much alive anymore, but I was back and forth to study that ritual, and so I've been back and forth still doing research on it.
So can I ask, what will folks see when they come to the exhibit tonight?
Folks are going to see very large paintings, very large, tall paintings, many of which will have a very iconic looking large woman on them, and lots of bodies. I'm a figural artist. I like to work with the figure, and my figures tend to split and divide, and they look like they're replicating themselves or multiplying somehow, and that's really visually what people will see. There's one very large two-panel work, my most recent work, called Flying Home with Laura Nelson, and that work is a conversation about an African-American woman who was lynched in the early 1900s, she and her son were both lynched, and I've brought her back to life to have a very strange conversation about death and life and murder and innocence. And she's flying across one of the canvases and carried by a host of sparrows, which in American folklore American folklore, sparrows are seen as the intermediaries in the, sorry about that, they're seen as a possible transitional figures between life and death, a flock of sparrows. And Laura Nelson appears in three identities. One is as herself, still with a noose around her neck, and another is in the guise of the fattened bride, the virgin fattened bride who is totally innocent, and of course innocence in this sense is innocent of any crimes. And then she appears as the personification of terror, with a scream that's so loud and so wide that her jaw is unhinged. And it's a black and white image. It's haunting, but there are musical scores on the image from an old slave song titled "I'm Going Home," and there's this conversation in that image about the possibility that home might be Africa. Maybe Laura Nelson escaped death, right? We hope maybe there's maybe I'm rewriting history and she escaped death, and like the legendary slaves in folklore, was able to fly back over the Atlantic back home, or perhaps we're dealing with the truth, which is Laura Nelson is going home to God, that she really didn't escape death. And it's a very strange image that somehow, with all the talks that we've been having over the last 2 days, this is the one image that all the students are like, what in the world are we looking at? And we've had amazing conversations about it. And so the lecture tonight at 7 o'clock, I'm hoping if my voice holds up,
because yeah,
I've been doing a lot of lecturing. Yeah. I was so blessed yesterday to be able to work with Kevin Dewey in the music department. And he vocalized me to get my voice back, and I sung for his choir. choir and they sung for me. There's a lot of cross-disciplinary stuff going on here. And I'm hoping that if my voice holds up, I'll be able to sing tonight at 7 before Robert Ferris Thompson's lecture, which I promise you will be a lecture like one you've never seen before.
Well, I was going to ask that, is that without giving anything away, you just, well, you just gave me the proper tease. What brought you here specifically?
Steve Glazer, who is the amazing gallery director.
It's pretty amazing, isn't he?
He is amazing. he saw my work at the Toledo Museum of Art in 2009 at a show called Converging Aesthetics, where I worked with a poet, and I was my works were somehow being they were. We were working together as poet and artist in this show. And Steve saw my work there, and we've been in contact ever since. And we just decided that it was time to come to this institution. And I've been warmly received. I've never been received this warmly by any institution before.
Really? No, I could have told you that. There's a lot. That's how it is here.
I couldn't have known.
Now, at the same time, you're not alone tonight. You're doing your exhibitions in conjunction with somebody else. And can you kind of fill us in on that real quick?
Robert Ferris Thompson is a world-renowned scholar of African art and African culture and Black culture. And I met him at Yale University. He was my thesis advisor, and he advised the writing of my dissertation and my entire process. It is by a very amazing coincidence that Steve Glazer once had Robert Ferris Thompson at another institution as a guest speaker. When Steve looked at my CV, he freaked out, and he's like, oh my gosh, you worked under Robert? Is it possible for us to bring both of you here? And
right.
I didn't know if it was possible. Robert immediately agreed, and he's only too happy to come. He is unlike any speaker I've ever seen. I didn't know I wanted to be at the Yale program until I saw him lecture. And it's exciting. I have a feeling he's going to be singing and dancing himself while he's lecturing. And if you didn't know him, you would think he was crazy. But in order to have the conversation about African traditions and African American traditions, he literally falls into character.
I love it. And again, the names didn't escape me. This Dr. Thompson's lecture is titled Commanders of the Cool, Afro-Atlantic Impact on Music, Art, and NFL Football. Well, that definitely has my attention. But of course, that'll be also in the Mackenzie Fine Arts. That's from 7 to 8.
Yes, his lecture is it's a 1 hour lecture that will involve images and who knows what else he's going to do, because that's Robert. It's a 1 hour lecture, and then right immediately following, right across the hall, is a reception in the Sisson Gallery.
In the gallery, okay. So and you are again. I'm going to do this,
Perfect.
Tonight, from 8 to 10 is the actual.
The opening
reception, and then before that. This is absolutely free. This is open to the public and free of charge.
It is absolutely free. We are bring a friend. You will never see anything like this again.
That is so cool. Absolutely. And again, it's called Cadence, Narratives of Yesterday/Tomorrow in Bride Residue.
Yes.
Interesting. And that'll run until November 24th.
Yes.
Thank you so much for being here and sharing this information with us. And I know I've already talked to quite a few people that are extremely excited about this.
It's almost over. I just really have to thank Steve Glazer, and also just the way I've been received at this school. It's never happened before like this. I hope that this will continue, this kind of cross-disciplinary thing between the gallery and different departments will continue in a big way, because I've spoken to amazing students here.
That is so cool. I'm glad to hear that. Something we already knew. All right. Thank you so much, and we look forward to seeing you tonight.
Thank you very much.
All right.
Thanks to our guest. Gallery opening tonight at the Sisson Gallery at Henry Ford Community College main campus in the Fine Arts Building from 7 until 10 tonight. It's free, and there's refreshments and great lecture, challenging art. Come on over. I mean, this is really fantastic, really special. One of the many things that happened here at the college. Well, here's one of the two commentaries now from Jim Hightower that we feature on this show, so listen up.
And we haven't even gotten to the final couple of weeks when the goofy and kooky really rise to the surface. The Tea Party, of course, is the big news, defeating mere right-wingers in several Republican primaries to nominate a gaggle of quacks who are such far, far, far right extremists that they won't even ride in a car that has a left turn signal. For Goofy, check the TPGOP Senate candidate in Delaware, who says she has, quote, dabbled into witchcraft. Or their Nevada Senate contender who wants to eliminate jobless benefits because they, quote, really have spoiled our citizenry. Yeah, you can live the life of Riley on unemployment pay. Meanwhile, the Tea Party itself, fueled by the legitimate fury of thousands of outsiders, has unwittingly fallen under the political leadership of consummate corporate insiders and longtime GOP operatives. Few grassroots teabag enthusiasts realize, for example, that the chief funder of their raging anti-establishment rallies is the uber-establishmentarian David Koch. The 19th richest man in America, he's using the Tea Party crowd to advance his laissez-faire agenda of creating a corporate kleptocracy that'll stomp on people like them. Koch is 2010's Wizard of Oz, only Ozier. But the farthest out political wackiness is coming from where else? The Newt. Trying to become the TGOP's 2012 presidential choice, Newt Gingrich has loosened all the nuts and bolts from his sanity, freeing his inner lunatic to go wild and smearing Barack Obama. Appealing to the birther bunch, Newt is asserting that the president exhibits, quote, Kenyan anti-colonial behavior, and that Obama's long-dead African father is actually guiding his policies. This is Jim Hightower saying, I didn't think the GOP could get any goofier, but Newt's gone scary goofy.
Today's commentary is underwritten by Wiley & Sons, publishers of Hightower's new book titled Swim Against the Current, Even a Dead Fish Can Go with the Flow, now available wherever books are sold.
And we're back with more of the new WHFR Journal, local news and alternative views. Jim Hightower was making comments about the stupidity, I guess, of some of the things that some of our elected politicians say and do. And that goes on all sides of the aisle, as they say. And I wanted to focus next on Tim Skupik's editorial opinion from last Sunday's Press and Guide about our state Senate Republicans. Again, I'm not pro or con, not taking sides here, not telling you who to vote for. But these are the comments that are coming up here, and Tim Skupik has been, host of a public broadcasting show from Lansing for almost longer than WHFR has been on the air, and he's up there all the time in Lansing, and he knows the players, and so his comments mean something. I don't think he's pulling any punches. I mean, he's been anti-Democrat, anti-Republican, pro-Republican, pro-Democrat, pro-Bonaro before he was even a name on the scene. Take a listen to what he has to say here about what's going on in Lansing right here in Michigan. He says, if somebody offered you $3 back for every dollar you invested, you'd jump at it. Hello? Republicans in the Michigan State Senate, hello? That's exactly what the GOP senators had a chance to do. But instead, and if you didn't realize that, if I offered you $3 back for every dollar you invested, okay, what is that? You make $2 profit? That's 200% profit? Okay, not bad, right? But this opportunity has been voted down because in our state Senate, Republicans are in the majority in Lansing. Okay, they unceremoniously scrapped a plan to raise badly needed dollars to keep the quote-unquote pure Michigan fall advertising schedule alive. And Tim goes on to say, unless you've been in Ohio for the last few years, you have seen the wonderfully written and beautifully produced pictures of the Michigan we know and love. And with Tim Allen's melodic voiceover, Tim Allen, the comic that had the TV show for many years, remember him? On ABC Television Network? Okay. Always wore sweatshirts from different places, especially in Michigan it started. Even wore a Henry Ford Community College sweatshirt once in one of the episodes. There you go. I think it was the one that was HFCC Harvard on the Rouge.
Okay.
That was a really popular one. Amy here is totally agreeing with me.
Yeah, that sounds like his style.
You're not that old, though, to remember. But it just sounds like his style. Yes, okay, there you go.
I know he's from here.
Right. And so this ad campaign has been voted down, voted out. We don't need ad campaign, nothing to advertise, I guess, and no reason to bring in tourist dollars. Ha, 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 ha. Well, Tim goes on, people who saw them in other states actually came here and spent their money on our stuff, from fudge to cheese. And for every buck the state poured into the ads, those out-of-towners pumped another $3 into our economy. But TV advertising is expensive, and the warning bell was sounded months ago. The tourist industry said, quote, we are going to run out of money unless some action is taken, unquote. Governor Jennifer Granholm, who is not deaf, heard the bell and crafted a nifty little scheme to raise the bucks, but not on the backs of her constituents. It was a fee called a tax on rental cars at airports. Quick, when was the last time you rented one of those? Exactly, says Tim Skupik. Never. So this would have hit visitors to the state, not residents, making it a win-win proposal. We got their money on the rental and bought more commercials, which brought even more folks into the state. But the spendthrift GOP senators wanted no part of that. They rebuked the 3-for-1 return on the investment. Isn't this the same bunch that says it wants to grow businesses? Problem is, this was a tax hike, you silly goose. And right there in the GOP manual, it is written, in an election year, under no circumstances should anyone with an R after his or her name vote for anything that even remotely resembles a tax increase, even if it is in the public interest to do that. Now, we know how rigid Republicans are about following the rules. So they killed the rental car fee, and now state tourism officials killed the Fall Color Tour Pro Michigan campaign because there's no money to support it. This was pure politics, trumping good public policy. Senate GOP folks are more interested in winning back their seats than pouring more money into the economy. If that is not a dereliction of duty, what is, asked Tim Skupik. But giving them credit, the Republicans have not wandered from the manual. When the business community suggested a new tax policy to increase the sales tax and expand it to services, the governor got on board and some economists chimed in too. Some of that new money could have been used to erase the state's mushrooming deficit that is about to be passed on to the next administration. And the Republicans are complaining the loudest about not fixing the structural deficit, quote unquote. But given a chance to side with their friends in business and create a better tax system, they said no. As always, they want it both ways. Gripe about the problem, reject any sensible solution to it, and then blame the other party for messing things up. That, of course, is, quote, pure you-know-what. And that's the way he phrased it, and we can't actually fill those words in for you over the radio because of FCC rules and our own standards of decency here.
That's right.
Yeah, that's
right,
more importantly.
Dennis and Amy are in the studio with me at this point. Thank you, Dennis, for handling the interview with that really dynamic gentleman, even though his voice was a little gravelly today. Yeah. After all the lectures.
Wow.
It's going to be an exciting time tonight at the Sisson Gallery,
yeah,
let me tell you.
Right
here.
He made my job easy, didn't he?
Henry Ford Community College. Yeah, so many interesting things. We could have done a couple hours, and I think he's been spending hours on campus explaining this. But the gallery exhibit, Amy, goes here even without the painter in residence until November sometime?
24th.
24th, great. Okay. That is excellent. See, Amy is on this mic. And
so you're just checking. Yeah, I move,
okay,
so,
yes.
You know.
Sneaky, yes.
You could see at least one person.
I'm going to run out to my car. Can you hear me?
No, I wanted to, we don't have any other special guests today other than Amy and Dennis, of course, as always. But
special.
I wanted to go back to, I've been trying to do research on the fact that Ford Motor Company has just stopped paying their property taxes, at least up to the extent that they think they're responsible for paying them. And this is causing tremendous trouble in districts that have Ford property, such as Dearborn. Dearborn is likely to lose $4 million, according to a Times Herald article that was just 2 weeks ago. Interesting to me that the Press and Guide is not followed up. I talked to them over there. I talked to Tim Powers, the editor. Hi, Tim, if you're listening. And they said they were waiting for their phone call to be returned from Gary Evanko. Hmm. And Gary Evanko, according to the story in the Times Herald, is waiting for a phone call to be returned to him from Ford Motor Company.
That's a lot of waiting. That's
which has
lot.
Gone on for about 2 months now, and Ford is just not answering the phone. Or, gee, we'd love to talk. I guess they did say they'd love to talk about that, but they haven't.
Maybe you should drive over there. Just a mile or so apart.
Yeah, and of course, I have my opinion that Ford, here, even if the Michigan State Tax Commission supposedly passed some ruling that Ford, GM, and Chrysler did not have to pay a percent of their property taxes in Michigan. That was not with input from any of the cities. That was not input from anyone. And so I did some research here. First of all, who is the Michigan State Tax Commission?
Who is the Michigan State Tax Commission,
well,
Jay?
Well, that's the question.
People that have never been in my kitchen.
Okay, I went to Michigan.gov. Where else can you go,
right?
Because
right?
They're part of Michigan government.
Right.
God bless them. And it turns out that they are a committee that advises the Senate.
Oh.
What body of government have I just got done talking about? The Michigan State Senate.
Right.
Controlled by what political party? Republicans. Okay, and where do Republicans stand on taxes?
Well,
cut them.
Traditionally, yeah, pro-business.
Right. And there's four people. Well, there's three people and an executive director. And try as I might at the Michigan government website, I found out about the tax commission, and I found no ruling about Ford or any other automakers having a reduction in their taxes approved by that group. Now, I did every search I could think of, every keyword like Ford Motor Company, Michigan automakers, car manufacturers. I tried every variation for 3 hours, could find no such ruling. And the next step is to call them on the phone, talk to their executive director, I guess, to find out what's being referred to here. Now, we know they did something because Gary Ivanko in the Times Herald article, and this is from, folks, you might want to look this up. Dennis reminded me, their website is SundayTimes.org.
Yes.
I'm putting it on the spot here. I don't have it. It's
Sunday Downriver Times or something.
Well, Downriver Sunday Times is the website. It's not Dearborn Times Herald, no. Although you could try to search for that and you can get nothing. But the story was in there on September 4th. Chris Jackett wrote this, and haven't seen his name on stories much. But it's a very complete story about what the Michigan State Tax Commission did on December 21st, 2009, which were intended for the 2010-11 fiscal year, which began July 1st for more municipalities. The 2010 multipliers decreased the rates from 2000, for the last time they set these, in every category, some by as much as 75%. Now, I don't think that's true in Dearborn, but that affects Dearborn, Allen Park, Woodhaven, Wayne, Livonia, Sterling Heights, and Flat Rock. And Gary Ivanko, just to sum this up from a couple weeks ago, because I haven't mentioned it, I've been waiting for follow-up from the Press and Guide from the city of Dearborn. Got nothing. Quite frankly, Gary Ivanko said on September 4th, I was shocked at those new multipliers. It says Ford Motor Company commissioned a study and got the State Tax Commission to buy into it. They not only spearheaded it, they paid for it. It's very unprecedented. And in Dearborn, it won't be that 75% reduction, but the new multipliers would reduce $63 million in property tax revenue by $4 million for the current fiscal year. So they'd lose $4 million, which my estimate there is, 5%, 8%, something like that. But $4 million is a big chunk out of the city of Dearborn budget. And we've heard nothing except that Ivanko wanted to sit down with Ford, along with the other tax assessor, at least the Allen Park tax assessor, wanted to talk to him too. Ford says, yes, we'd love to talk. And neither have been talking. Ford has not called back to set up an appointment for the last couple of months. And just to show you the consequences of this is new, though, this week. I was, again, searching on the Internet. There's no stories anywhere, not in the Detroit Free Press, not in the news, anything about this. I'm just saying that these cities are being hurt without right of their input as to whether or not these tax exemptions and abatements are appropriate. In fact, even the whole Michigan State Legislature has not voted on this. It's the State Senate Committee, Advisory Committee, that just did this. Now, I can't understand how an advisory committee, without government approval and maybe signed by the governor, can just reduce taxes as much as 75% on some of these multipliers, as they call them, in all these communities. And then, because Ivanko thought, well, it's patently illegal, it's patently unfair. I mean, that's the impression I get from his statements. He didn't think it was going to go into place. That Ford just stopped paying their taxes. Zap. And so since they haven't been paying property taxes, I assume it's a monthly assessment or something that they've noticed, they probably will start, but they like the first $4 million they won't pay or something. The city is already out the money. And none of these cities expected this. Okay, even though apparently the State Tax Commission did notify Evanco in January, according to the article, but he didn't believe it was going to happen, apparently. If you're against it, get your lawyers going. Challenge that ruling. There must be a way to challenge it in court. Class action suit from all these different communities. Well, they're just knuckling under these communities. You know, I personally think even if Ford is justified, if they had an argument to make or something, you can't cut off these cities and all the services it means. What does it mean in Wayne? Okay, this is what happened at the Wayne City Council on September 21st. This is from the City of Wayne City Council minutes from the City of Wayne website. Okay, on September 9th, due to the Ford Motor Company's notification, now they did notify Wayne, that it intends not to pay its property tax, Wayne City Council members adopted a plan to meet twice a week, or as often as required, to review ongoing negotiations with Ford. Are they actually negotiating? Is somebody talking to them over there? To review in depth the city's departments and determine the required action steps which must be taken to reduce and or eliminate city services, and further reduce staff in order to balance the city's budget as required by law. And what are they considering? Okay, here we go. Several Wayne citizens appeared before City Council in Wayne to discuss rumored closing of Wayne Police and Fire Departments. Mayor Haidous, H-A-I-D-O-U-S in Wayne, said no such action has been done, nor was it anticipated. However, he went on to say, Council is now forced to consider additional budget cuts for this fiscal year above those already implemented due to recent notification by Ford Motor Company that it intends not to pay its most recent bill. So, close the Wayne Police and Fire Departments is possible because of this. He didn't directly make the connection, but that's one thing they might have to consider. Now, we know when certain smaller, quote-unquote, cities do that, they usually make a deal with, I don't know, the county or neighboring communities to come in when needed. But not to have your local on-site officers there, whether it's fire or police, is a real safety issue. If I was a Wayne resident, I'd be very upset right now because I just don't understand how a state tax commission can do this, and there's no recourse but to knuckle under. Oh, Ford said they wouldn't pay, so I guess we'll have to do with less. Give me a break here, okay? And maybe a steering mechanism and a Ford car or two also. This is just wrong thing for Ford to do. As I mentioned about a month ago when I talked about how it wasn't necessarily patriotic to buy what you think is an American car, as I mentioned then, and my opinion only, opinions on this show are not necessarily those of anyone here at Henry Ford Community College, but this is not patriotic for Ford to do this. They're killing these communities in a bad economic time, and I know Ford has to watch their budget too, but they're doing good, right? Better than GM and Chrysler. Their profits, percentage-wise with gross sales, are very, very good and strong, and of course a way to keep that profit coming in is to don't pay anything you don't have to. That's the way it is in business. And you don't worry about the ethics of it or what you're doing to your local communities. Well, if they have no concern about their local communities, I don't think they should get tax abatements and tax reductions in the start. At the very beginning, they're not paying their full amount of taxes in most of these communities because the cities were friendly enough to give them a lesser rate just as a token of friendship and to keep their business. And now they're not even paying the percent of those taxes? And there was no chance for the cities to discuss this at the state level. It wasn't even voted on by the full legislature. This is just wrong, wrong, wrong. And if you're concerned, you should call. I'd say in Dearborn, call Mayor O'Reilly and say, what's being done about this? Where is this? I think attention should be brought to Ford Motor Company, not these backroom deals. I think public attention ought to go there. I think there should be until they sit down to negotiate. And even if, you know, I think we need to challenge in court the legality of these reductions, the fairness of these reductions. If it does happen, if it's proven in court that it has to happen, then it has to be phased in, folks, so the city can plan ahead. All these cities, all these six major cities, including Wayne, so that Wayne doesn't have to lose their local police and fire departments. Come on. This is unbelievable. absolutely unbelievable. And I challenge the Times Herald and the Press and Guide, who have off the record, and I won't say who, suggested to me, well, we got to keep a low profile while negotiations are going on. I don't think so. I think Ford needs some pressure here. You don't negotiate out of weakness. Okay, your weakness, the only power you have is to go and file that lawsuit.
Yes, public pressure.
The point isn't even that. How about just some objective commentary, some objective news on it, not just sitting and waiting?
Yeah.
I'm not asking them to put pressure on anybody. Just report it.
Exactly.
This is, and that's the part that's ridiculous to me, and that's probably with the editor's hat on, but whatever.
Well, I know what Ford would say if we called them and if we actually brought this up. They will say, we've decided to pay our legal amount as judged by a state commission, and we've been assessed too much, mm-hmm. and so we're not going to pay that full amount because we believe that this ruling overrides the local assessments. And that's what Ford is going to say. So, and that's their legal position. They've got a little bit of a state, they got the state commission ruling, which I couldn't find though on the website anywhere. But they supposedly have that behind them now. Well, that needs to be challenged legally then. That's the only way to approach that. If Ford says, well, the law is with us, well, it's not exactly the law, but if that ruling is with them and stays with them, then they're in the right. Okay, although it's still not patriotic to cut off the city. I think the first thing somebody has to do, Deborah Walling in Dearborn, with the mayor behind you and the city council, file a class action suit for all these other communities, because Dearborn's the biggest, so we should take the lead here, and challenge that ruling, first of all, in court. Secondly, exactly, as Dennis said, let's get the negotiations going. If the ruling holds, then let's just phase it in, not do what Ford is doing. I've already ordered my new car. I mentioned on the show several times, it was the end of my lease, so I had to order a new car for December. And this month, I didn't get a Ford. Why not? I was looking at several. It was on my list. Yep. They're not paying their taxes. They're not negotiating. They cut off these cities, and they're throwing them into chaos, at least, you know, potential chaos. And that's just not right for Ford to do. So I boycotted, if you will. I had to make the decision. I've already made it. By the way, I'm getting a diesel car.
All right.
There you go. Yeah, a diesel car made in the U.S.
All right.
Okay. But I won't go into more details right now.
Did he tell you, Amy?
No, I'm not telling anybody.
Oh, yeah. Really?
But the point is, I'm getting better gas mileage, paying less money than the car I have right now, in fact, on this lease, and you know, doing better for the environment and so on, cleaner air and all that. And so I'm doing my part. But Ford was on the list along with 20 others, and still had my friendly salesman, a former student, ready to give me a test drive, and I had to say no because of this whole situation with Ford. If they don't think that what they do as a company doesn't affect their sales, then they're wrong, especially in their hometown. In their hometown, they're screwing around, pardon the expression, that's not a sexual reference. They're just messing up and playing games, business games, with no ethics involved at all, just for high profit in their hometown. So give me a break. I boycotted Ford. I didn't buy Ford. That was my patriotic duty as a citizen when somebody hurts my hometown, even short term. Okay. Well, enough with that. We'll try to keep you updated. Let's get the professionals going here. Anybody wants to dig into that, please do. We have solid evidence from the Times Herald. I mean, there's so many details there. It's gotta be that way. I wish I could have found the actual Michigan State Tax Commission ruling online. I'd like to have read it in detail, but not at this point. So, moving ahead. And Amy and Dennis are just staring at me.
No, I want to get a hold of the Times Herald writer, because that would make sense that he had an opportunity to read the committee. Mm-hmm. The new assessment. Okay. Well, this is actually...
Yeah, Dennis, do that follow-up. See if you can talk to that reporter at least.
Chris Jacket. Okay.
Yeah, if not someone else. Okay, big story in the Dearborn Press and Guide. There was really nothing in the Times Herald. I'm sorry, Times Herald. It was stories that were repeated elsewhere, we've already mentioned. And sometimes, you know, you broke that wonderful story on September 4th that I just did. I mean, news that people have to know here in Dearborn that's really going to hurt our city government if that situation stands. Dearborn Press and Guide, Wednesday, however, it is reported just because of a time thing. Their deadline to press is a little bit later than the Press and Guide, even though Times Herald, even though they have the same so-called date on the front page of Wednesday, September 29th. The jury is in, and the ruling was that the four Christian missionaries who were handing out and discussing their philosophies, their religious precepts, concepts at the Arab International Festival back in, was it June, July, that they were found not guilty of inciting the crowd, but one of them was found guilty of not obeying a police order to do something or not do something, whatever that was. However, that person received just one day of jail time, and they got credit for time served. They apparently been held after their initial arrest for more than a day, I guess.
Yeah, for at least a day. Sure.
At least a day, anyway. And so that person is not serving any time, but they were found guilty of not obeying a police order. That's a basic rule, by the way, of law, folks. If you encounter the police in any situation, whether it's in regard to a gun law or they come to your house, you do have to obey their orders.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? I mean, you can quietly ask questions, maybe. What do you do if they say shut up, though? But you can't not obey that order, because that's against the law,
right.
Interestingly. So they'll throw you in jail for that.
Yeah.
And
even if you weren't guilty of anything else.
That's right. Yeah. So although it's certainly a misdemeanor, but you know,
still you're being in jail, and that's that can't be good.
Yeah.
Is it?
You don't want to restrict their power to investigate and get all the facts and as they see it. Now, I did read somewhere here, and we don't need to go into all the details of the case necessarily, is that the question of the video camera recording. That there was video camera recording, and that one of the participants said that the police touched the woman. To stop the recording. Now, the police dispute that. They've denied the allegations that they touched the woman who was doing a video recording at that point. The police say in Dearborn that the missionaries were arrested because their behavior, quote, drew and incited a large crowd. Blah, blah, blah. But in fact, the court ruled them not guilty of inciting the crowd. So I won't say the police overreacted. They reacted as they interpreted the situation at the time. And the court, after listening to testimony from all sides, decided they weren't inciting the crowd, or they were on the edge of inciting the crowd. I don't know. But
yeah,
it was inappropriate action of the police or inappropriate decision on the police to make that arrest at that time, according to the court. But I doubt that'll mean a civil suit or anything, which was threatened by the that person. So freedom of speech supposedly is primary in this country. And in that public situation, on the streets of Warren, I think it's usually held, right? Outside on the streets of Warren.
Yeah, East Dearborn, sure.
East Dearborn, that they were, until it gets to the point of inciting a crowd or inciting a riot or somebody throws
perceived
a punch.
Perceived inciting, right?
Perceived, yeah. Well, no, it has to be more, well, it's perceived that there's some actions, I think, that are taking place that are unruly, that are spreading. Or something.
So can I ask you something? If you are you're making comments in a public forum, then I don't like them. I don't agree with you, and I throw a water balloon at you. Did you incite me to throw that, or am I? Do you see which came first?
The disconnect. It's like, what's the difference between being on a soapbox, which is really, I think, this what this amounts to? They were on their soapbox, and actually stirring up a crowd into some.
Because
negative
some,
action.
Some might argue that if you disagree with me, that I'm stirring that up just by I'm provoking.
No, I get what you're saying. I don't
you
know where that. It so seems like there's some personal accountability that ought to be.
Thank you, and I think that the courts place. Basically that's what they said. It's interesting though, and I know we're going to move on, but that to secure your freedom of speech, what you have to go through to get there. You know, you have to pass all these tests, if you will, and sometimes they're in court. And sometimes you have to spend a day in jail to secure
good
the
point.
Right. And
yep.
It, you know, so.
Yep. This is interesting. At the end of this article, and it's always interesting to turn the page and read all of the articles. And I really kind of disagree with that, because most people don't turn the pages. They read the headlines. And, of course, as Dennis knows as a newspaper person, normally the way you structure a newspaper story, a print newspaper story, is you put the who, where, why, when, and how right at the beginning. Well, usually not the how or the why, because you don't have time for that.
Right.
So you put the basic facts at the beginning, and then you sort of trail in terms of lesser importance, the other details. you know, to the end, to finish it up. And, of course, that allows newspaper editors like yourself here at the Mirror, in, you know, to, it, depending on the space you have on the page, you just chop off the bottom.
You're exactly
because
right.
Because it's less important, and that's how they, that's why they write it that way. But very often, some of the details at the end of the story that are published anyway are very interesting and evocative, and actually might change your mind about what the story means or how the story means. And here we have a quote. It says, "Dearborn Mayor Jack O'Reilly," from the story in the Press and Guide at the end on page 10A, "Dearborn Mayor Jack O'Reilly said that while he respects the jury's decision, he believes the missionaries were pulling a publicity stunt on YouTube in order to raise money." That was that video that they took. He says, and this is a direct quote from our mayor, "It's really about a hatred of Muslims," O'Reilly said, by this particular group of Christians anyway.
Okay? Interesting.
He said, quote, "That is what the whole heart of this is. Their idea is that there is no place for Muslims in America. They fail to understand the Constitution." So that's, what did they call the?
It's called a leap.
No. This group is not just Christians. Don't say, oh, it's Christians there. It was a group that referred to themselves as the Apologetics, Acts.
That's right.
17. Look up Acts 17, ACTS in the Bible, in the King James Bible. There goes Amy.
Yeah.
Just open your Bible that you carry right with you there, Amy. Acts 17, Apologetics. That's what they're called, and it seems like they have an agenda that's not according to the mayor, and the mayor is welcome to his opinion, of course, about this, but he is suggesting here that the Acts 17 apologetics are not certainly mainstream Christians.
Right.
Because most Christians, I would hope, do not hate Muslims.
Right.
In general. Because, well,
hating is wrong.
Not only that, but Judaism, Christianity, and Islam share so much in terms of beliefs and ethics. I mean, Jesus is in the Quran, you know, significantly as a significant figure. I know Muhammad is in there too, but nonetheless, you know, they're all the three central monotheistic religions of the world. They have so much in common between them. If you got to be religious and you're in one of the three, you should see the other two as only supporting and reinforcing from different angles and approaches what you're already trying to do. Now, we're generalizing. I think most of the differences, there's been disputes between Jews and Christians for years and Muslims and Christians. I think it's all how you interpret the basic tenets of the churches. You know, if you look at the original documents and you set aside the political interpretations, I do mean political, the political interpretations of one national state or another for the last several hundred years, sure, that has changed these religions as practiced in those countries significantly, but if you go back to the core principles, there's an awful lot in common here. And of course, hatred of anyone is completely unjustified. If you disagree with them, you either avoid them or you try to work out your differences. That is the civilized thing to do. And if we don't get civilized, it's not going to end well for any of us. If we're going to move forward on this planet as a species, I almost want to say a specious species, a disputational species, a species of animal that likes to kill its own kind, which is just vile and disgusting to me, but it's one of the human characteristics, and we've got to fight against that. we have to change our language. We have to change our attitudes, and it happens internally, you know. And a lot of great people in each religion know how to do that. They know about compassion and understanding.
That's right. And lead by example.
How to work out.
Sure.
Lead by example. There you go. So I just thought that O'Reilly's statement, I hadn't heard that, and it's his opinion there, but he's suggesting that the Acts 17 apologetics, and I think it's something that the newspaper stories should have indicated, these are not mainstream Christian people.
But it's irrelevant because they were found not guilty. I'm interested in when the mayor... when his comments were made, when his actual quote...
Or if he saw the video in order to back that up.
Right. Well, if it was before the trial, then that would make more sense than
that. No, he disagrees with...
The verdict?
The verdict.
Gotcha.
Right.
Interesting.
So it had to be after.
Right.
Yeah. at some point.
I'm sure he wouldn't comment beforehand.
No, that'd be appropriate. But
exactly. Yeah.
Of course, he supports, part of his administration, he supports the police and their decisions. He would do that anyway.
Sure.
He's the ultimate backup for what the police do, unless they were grievously in error. He probably felt it was a judgment call, even if it was thrown out of court later, that did prevent a future, getting even more unruly. There was a potential there. Maybe it wasn't out of control at that moment, apparently, according to the jury, but there was a potential. So the police and the administration always would side on trying to preserve public safety.
Sure.
And they went a little far here, according to that ruling in the court. But that event or that situation was defused, if the fuse had been lit, if it was lit and the police thought it was, then before the explosion happened, they were able to take action. And I'm sure that's how they see it. And I guess it just didn't seem to be going that far to the jury. All right. And of course, it has to be a jury of your peers. So how many Christians were on that jury? How did they pick that? How many residents of Dearborn or of East Dearborn?
Right.
How many Muslims were on the jury? Interesting question. How do you pick in that case a jury that is a jury of their peers? Well, the city lawyer has a chance to refuse, and their attorney has a chance to refuse. So with all the refusals they get on both sides, they got people that were supposedly fair-minded, whatever that background happened to be. I know I was refused for a jury once in Detroit because I was too well-educated. I thought that was interesting.
Okay, good.
That the person being charged didn't finish high school, and here I had two master's degrees. So.
You know what's interesting? It seems like you would enjoy that whole process, too.
Oh, it's a hoot.
Is it? Are you being sarcastic?
Have you ever been seated on a jury?
Yes, but...
Was it a hoot?
Luckily, it was only...
Guilty or not guilty?
I was seated twice, and it's always fascinating. I think it's better than reality TV, but I don't think it's appropriate for these things to be covered on television.
Oh, yeah.
What embarrassment. First of all the lawyers on every side are much less competent than anybody you see on TV. Even if they're losing on TV, they're better lawyers than what you see in person.
Well, they're better scripted.
Yes. Of course. A fictional drama, you're going to give them the best words, even if they're bad people.
Right.
And everything moves along so swiftly, either justice or injustice. And it's just, I protest, Your Honor. And just, the process is messy. But I think, and it's the best thing we got. I don't know any other country that has a better judicial system or a better design for one that allows all sides to have input. The only problem I see is the influence of money in buying the better lawyers.
Absolutely.
And the extensions of time.
Yeah.
And influencing who gets appointed as a judge ultimately. So,
right.
The people who have more money and invest more money and buy the power and influence the power, they can unbalance the system we have now. And that's the problem, is that the average poor person just can't get equal representation no matter how hard our system tries to get them a good defense attorney or the fair time. Although I think judges try as hard as they can to compensate for that. I'm not sure all juries can. Juries can't resist the silver-tongued devil that much. My opinion. Okay.
Well, I think they're very interested in moving things along.
Yeah.
Judges are.
Well, it's strange.
Lead them out. Keep it moving.
It's strange. But here's another legal thing. Okay. And this is attorney Morris Goodman. Morris writes editorials for the Press and Guide. And it's reported here in the Press and Guide. But he has taken up the cause of Marge Powell, who is, right now not currently serving on the Civil Service Commission that she served on for 30-some years.
But not.
Voluntarily. She served voluntarily for 17 years. It seems that the last time she was appointed, her last four-year appointment, reappointment, she never took the oath of office. And the article points out here in the Press and Guide from the 29th is that quite a few people, and this is what Morris Goodman points out, have not gotten the oath of office either. And they've been allowed just... snap your fingers, to continue or to get the oath late.
Right. Retro or whatever.
Yeah.
Sure.
Right. In this case, Morris is not representing Marge Powell. He's representing a plaintiff, Joanne Eric, Okay, she is the one, you see, and he sees this as payback from Tucholsky, because politicians, they always like to do payback if anyone steps against them or opposes them. Just one day after the Civil Service Commission tabled a request from Tucholsky to reassign or reclassify an employee from the city council office to the city clerk's office, so they tabled the request. The next day, he brought up the Marge Powell thing to take her out of voting. And, of course, Tucholsky declined to comment on the allegation because now it's a court thing. The city of Dearborn declined to comment because Mary Landros said, corporation counselor had said, don't comment because Morris Goodman has filed suit now. Again, specifically, he says they're going to he has got a restraining order against, he wants a restraining order against the city of Dearborn to prevent the City Service Commission from replacing former Councilwoman Marge Powell with a new commissioner until a proper hearing could be held. And remember, we went over the story, folks, here, that hearing was going to be held in early August. Remember that? Nod your heads, Amy and Dennis.
Vaguely,
okay, they're nodding
sure.
their heads. August 5th. A study session was held in order to discuss the matter, quote, with all 7 council members present and all 4 sitting civil service commissioners present, unquote. According to the complaint, during the meeting, both Mayor Jack O'Reilly and City Attorney Walling stated that they had researched the point as to whether there would be a precedent-setting problem with respect to any other appointees having the same problem with oath-taking, and they thought there were none. They both acknowledged that there was at least one instance with an appointment, the acting fire chief, having served in his position without taking the required oath for some time. And that, Goodman said, is part of the reason that Eric decided to file the complaint. She felt there was a double standard. At least 3 other people, she was the one that was supposed to have been transferred because Tucholsky said transfer her from city council to clerk's office. I don't know if it's the same pay grade or what, but anyway. At least 3 other people, says Goodman, have been allowed to retain appointed city positions despite missing the 10-day window to take the office. Marge Powell was singled out. And now, a hearing has been scheduled for 9 a.m. this month, this Tuesday, October 5th, in front of Wayne County Circuit Judge Brian Sullivan. So that's where it's going from here. Now, and this is I just pointed this out a couple of months ago as a little procedural thing that
could have been remedied.
Weird and maybe could have been remedied and straightened out. And so what's going on here?
Well, we know that somebody doesn't want her there. I mean, they just keep putting up the roadblocks.
I don't know. Is this an anti-Tucholsky thing? Because his mother ran, although his mother's not currently in the running
right.
for office. I don't know. Okay, we're coming to the end here, folks. We only have 3 minutes left on the new WHFR Journal officially. We're waiting for Highway 61 to begin in a few minutes. We'll try to cover some other issues. Fall into Dearborn starts tomorrow at City Historical Museum. It's called Fall into Dearborn. I think it's an unfortunate choice of words because I don't want anybody to hurt themselves, but a lot of fun will be had there. There's some historical recreations, an antique appraisal clinic, Civil War encampment. They're going to dig up some bodies and prop them up. I don't know, it'd be gruesome. I hate Civil War reenactments because they reenact killing people. I'm sorry, pacifist. I don't like to glorify killing. Anyway, a pumpkin carving from 10 to 5. So it's 10 to 5 tomorrow at the Dearborn Historical Museum. That carving is a small fee attached for knives.
Maybe
pumpkins.
For pumpkins.
Yeah, I don't know. Whatever. 2 to 3 p.m. Hey, Joanne would like this. They do have music.
Bring your own.
I don't know how it fits in, but Peter Mad Cat Ruth from Ann Arbor area, who used to do blues, I think he does more rock and roll or folksy things now, he's going to be performing live for free there. And Reptile Incorporated, an entertaining and educational presentation on reptiles is going to be there too.
Amy, you're shaking your head.
At 10:30 and 3 o'clock.
Wow.
Oh, really?
I have, yeah.
Okay.
You know, it's
my daughter
great
used
for
to do
kids.
That. She had a little company a few years back, and she went around with reptiles and other strange creatures for putting on displays. Now she's actually in the classroom full time, so she has no time for that. But and no money to hire Reptiles Incorporated to come in the classroom.
Shame.
But yeah. Other things coming up real quick here. Snyder-Bonero debate week from Sunday. It is Sunday, October 10th. This is on public broadcasting. Check your local channel
it's
listings.
Crazy.
7 p.m. I don't know. It's just for an hour. Everybody gets 30-second sound bites back and forth. I don't know. That's crazy. That's not in-depth. Today, though, Snyder was on for an hour taking questions on WDET. I don't know if that's archived.
I think it was archived. I heard him a week or so ago, and one of the questions...
Bonero was on for an hour a week or so ago, too. Mm-hmm. Yes.
And one of the questions from a caller was... would you allow third-party candidates into the debate?
Mm-hmm.
I think this was to Bonero, and he said, "Well, after Rick Snyder and I have, you know, had our debate, then we can, you know, the next debate could incorporate."
Yeah, there won't be a next debate,
no,
folks.
No, there
it
won't.
It doesn't look like it's planned at all. And, as I said, Bonero, especially in 30-second bites, he is a brutal debater. Face-to-face, he could make Snyder cry. Not that he deserves to cry, but I'm just saying, if they let him get too close, who knows what's going to happen. He may, you know, Snyder, just one stare from Bonero, Snyder could go up in flames.
Wow, you don't have a lot of confidence in him, do you?
And it has nothing to do with the issues. I think
gotta get him on TV.
That's unfortunate. Snyder is just not the dynamic personality. Now, I think what's hurt Bonero, and I said this in the show before, is that on TV, his little 30-second and 60-second commercials, if you can find any of his that talk about himself, both he and Snyder are doing the dirtiest of dirty attack spots I've ever seen. I don't respect either one of them in terms of their campaigning, in spite of the fact somebody told them that negative campaigning helps.
Yeah.
You know, really helps. People love negative campaigning.
They do.
I want to find out what these people are all about. And I think Snyder has an argument to be made, and so does Bonero, and neither one of them are getting a chance, really, to talk about what they really will try to do in detail. But and if you got a chance and you got $40, or if you're a member of the Dearborn Chamber of Commerce, they're doing a breakfast this coming Thursday. I think it's at the Dearborn Inn. I didn't write down where it is. October 7th, Snyder is going to speak.
Cool. Or go to our political podcasts. We have them archived July 2nd,
right.
June 11th. And you can hear them in detail, talk about their platform.
Amy's suggesting the WHFR Journal archives at WHFR.fm. Go to the first date for Bonero was...
Bonero, June 11th.
June 11th. And Rick Snyder, we interviewed on this show...
July 2nd.
July 2nd. And I doubt they've changed their opinions much. At least they went into a little more detail then. That's all the time we have for the new WHFR Journal. Thank you for listening today. Hope you were excited. Again, that wonderful, challenging, dynamic young painter from Massachusetts, Nigerian connections, African-American heritage is all wrapped up into his work. Kind of multimedia intentions or inspirations.